So we're going to do our question-answer session. And this is our last question-answer session. So you can think ahead, even the part you haven't heard yet, you can ask questions about what you haven't heard yet, because there's no more after this. Okay. I've been describing that Krishna conscious activity should be performed from the heart. My question is, whether one should take to Krishna conscious activities to the extent that it is coming from the heart, or do it forcibly. No, not forcibly. I'm not sure what the question is. If I understood, we practice. We practice. And you can practice from the heart as opposed to practicing in some other way. Practicing out of fear, practicing out of duty, practicing because you want something material. And then when that material something is accomplished, devotional service disappears. See you later, Krishna. It's a matter of cultivation. That's all. It's not force. It's natural. It's natural. I think that's enough. Is the person that asked this question satisfied with this? That's it. You're satisfied.
प्रभु ने प्रश्न पूछा कि आपने बताया कि जो भी कृष्णा कॉन्शियसनेस में हम जो भी करते हैं वो हृदय पूर्वक करना चाहिए तो क्या हमें जितनी मात्रा में हम कर सकते हैं हृदय पूर्वक बस उतनी मात्रा में हम कृष्ण भामरामृत को स्वीकार करना चाहिए या बलपूर्वक हमें अपने इच्छा के बगैर भी बलपूर्वक करना चाहिए तो महाराज ने यह बताया कि बलपूर्वक की बात नहीं है ये सिर्फ अभ्यास की बात है हम अभ्यास करते रहते हैं हम अपने जितने प्रयत्न करते हैं कई बार हमको कुछ भौतिक इच्छाएं होती है उसके विरुद्ध भी हम कोशिश करते हैं कि ये प्रैक्टिस करें और इसमें कोई ऐसा फोर्स नहीं है ये तो कृष्णा कॉन्शियसनेस नेचुरल है बिल्कुल स्वाभाविक है अपने से हम जैसे जैसे प्रैक्टिस करते हैं वो और अपना स्वभाव में स्वाभाविक हो जाता है ये बताया मैं
Anything else? Yes.
As you said, in class that we should take charity. So how to take charity? By praying or by chanting or like, is there any method prescribed to take charity?
Would it help? I'm not sure what you want to know. Would it help to hear a description of the angas of surrender? In Padma Puran, it says there are 6 angas of surrender, limbs of surrender. That's what you're looking for?
In some situation, I feel like I'm feeling helpless.
That's good. You don't like feeling helpless, but it's good to feel this. spiritually. I'm not just saying that because it's nice, that sounds nice, it's good. So when you're helpless, you take shelter, you seek help. How? You reach out. Just like a little girl here. What does her mother know when she goes like this? Didn't have to say anything. She just goes like this. Right? I'm helpless. That's all you have to do. Really, it's all you have to do. Whether you say it or you offer a prayer or you meditate, you remember, you recite standard prayers that you like, or just go like that. That's what Gajendra did. Right? Krishna knows. Just like that. It's very, very, very simple. It doesn't require, this is this goes back to the thought that I had yesterday evening and repeated again this morning, which is it doesn't require some mental adjustment or some information that's being withheld, some kind of, you have to have a password to get to this special secret code information. It's very natural. And as mothers know what this means, Krishna knows. Just, if you're feeling, you express that to Krishna. Now, what Krishna does, that's up to him. Remember the message, when you surrender to Krishna, please remember it's on his terms. So, but he's loving. So our expectation may not match what Krishna does. But Krishna's reciprocation will be there because he's loving. So the how-to part is much less important, zero. But it's much less important than like Draupadi. What did she do? She was feeling helpless. Krishna! Govinda! And Krishna was there. Very feelingly. But before that feeling of helplessness, there's a nice description in Mahabharata when she first met Krishna. Of course, it's Leela because she's one of the associates of Krishna, eternal associates of Krishna, very unique personality. But after she was, after her Svayambar, she was one, or, you know, Arjuna successfully. By the way, I understand that there was some doubt about the arrow of Arjuna that was fired. And I researched. It wasn't the eye of the bird, not fish, was the target of Dronacharya, the eye of the bird, at least in the version of Mahabharata that I have been reading. And the eye of the bird. But when it was the fish in the ceiling, it wasn't the eye of the fish, it was the fish. Detail. But forgot the train of thought. We're the main message I want to communicate here is that the how-to part is less important than the spirit. Krishna understands the spirit, and he reciprocates with that. Yeah, I was saying it's on Krishna's terms. Yeah, when Draupadi first saw Krishna, it was after Draupadi was won, and she was in Indraprastha with her five husbands and Kunti. And it was just after the Swayambhar ceremony, so Krishna and Balaram were still in Hastinapur, and Krishna went from the King Drupad's kingdom to see the Pandavas. And when he went to see the Pandavas, there was Draupadi. And Draupadi was very shy. She couldn't even look at Krishna. But Krishna was pleased by that shyness. But she had such devotion for Krishna that when there was any danger, like Kunti was praying for danger, when there was any danger, she was especially vocal. And it wasn't just how loud she called Krishna, it was this the helplessness with which she called Krishna. Krishna knows, Krishna came. She didn't take any how-to lessons. She just called out for Krishna. How does a child call for their mother? They just scream. They don't go to screaming class. They just scream. And the mother comes running. Because this is their child. They have love for their child. What is it? It's the feeling that we have, that feeling of helplessness, that's wonderful. Just to repeat, as a theme, that sense, it's not a contradiction to say that the feeling of helplessness is matched with full dependence upon Krishna. And it's that full dependence upon Krishna that is the essence of our Krishna consciousness. Or say it the other way. If we feel independent from Krishna, that's our material consciousness. So helpless before Krishna is wonderful. Don't feel bad about that. Don't try to get rid of that. That's very nice. And then express that to Krishna, however suits you. Each of us has our nature. Don't try to be a stoic and hold it in. I don't want Krishna to see that I'm feeling helpless. And also, feeling helpless doesn't mean I can't do service because I'm feeling helpless. You follow? I don't have any qualification, so I can't serve. But we're constitutionally servants, so we have to serve. But I don't have any qualification. Well, your qualification of feeling that you don't have a qualification is a qualification. And feeling that I have qualification, that's a disqualification. There's pride. So connect that feeling of helplessness with spiritual conception. Spiritual conception, by negation, it means devoid of an independent sense of strength apart from Krishna. Know that to be illusion. It's right in the Chatur Shloki verses of the Bhagavatam. But now that's other than helpless is bad. Helpless in the material sense is also bad. Spiritualize that conception. Helpless is like the spark that's taken away from the fire. The spark in connection with the fire is a glow. But without the fire, I'm helpless. So stay by the fire. That's, and I'm still feeling helpless. That's nice. That's the spiritual conception. There's nothing independent that comes from me separate from Krishna. This is a dilemma question. We come to Krishna consciousness to develop our unconditional love for Krishna and serve Him, knowing our true relation with Him. We engage in devotional activities to achieve that. Slowly we get to know that there's a way or rules of doing it all. Gradually it becomes a ritual which we have to perform with a certain level of perfection. Most of the time we lack and then get stuck with the thought of not doing the way we should be doing. Question. Is Krishna, is love of Krishna bound by rules? Answer, no. Love of Krishna is not bound by anything. We're bound. We're bound by our conditioning. And vidhi, sadhana bhakti, is prescribed ways, effective ways of practice. When we go beyond, when we achieve the purification from vidhi sadhana bhakti, then we are no longer bound by the vidhis when it comes to bhava bhakti and prema bhakti. But still one does vidhis because it helps teach others how to practice Krishna consciousness. So that's, the problem is not that there's vidhis. The problem is we're lazy. And we take the vidhis as the essence instead of what they're meant to be. They're means for purification. So what Rupa Goswami teaches is, on the one hand, neglecting of the regulations of bhakti causes fall down. And the other is just performing the regulations without understanding the purpose behind the regulations is cause for fall down. Therefore, take the middle position, follow the vidhis with the understanding of the purpose behind them. And everything is very nice. Hare Krishna.
प्रश्न यह था कि हम कृष्ण कॉन्शियसनेस में आते हैं कि कृष्ण भगवान की भक्ति पाने के लिए, पर आने के पश्चात हमको ये पता चलता है कि इसमें कई सारे नियम हैं और हम जैसे जैसे आगे बढ़ते हैं बस पूरे तरह नियम में उलझे रहते हैं और ये हमें लगता है कि सदा मन में ये रहता है कि अरे ये इस विधि से करना है, इससे करना है, इससे नहीं करना है. तो और उसमें ये भूल जाते हैं कि कृष्ण को प्रेम करने के लिए हम आए थे. तो प्रश्न ये था कि जो कृष्ण प्रेम है वो क्या विधि से बंधा हुआ है, क्या हम उसका विधि में बंधा हुआ है? तो इसका उत्तर महाराज ने दिया, नहीं, कृष्ण प्रेम विधि में नहीं बंधा हुआ है, हम बंधे हुए हैं, हमारी आलोचना इसमें बंधी हुई है. विधि दी गई है अपने शास्त्रों में आचार्यों द्वारा। विधि इसलिए है अपने अपने आप को पवित्र करने के लिए, अपने प्योरिफिकेशन के लिए विधि दी गई है। और हम जब आध्यात्मिक ये कृष्ण कॉन्शियसनेस में हम और विकास करते हैं, और तब हम विधि के पार जा सकते हैं, पर जब हम साधका हैं तब तक हमको विधि पालन करना है। महाराज ने कहा कि वास्तव में विधि का कठिनाई नहीं है, कठिनाई यह है कि हम आलसी हैं। विधि को हमें लेना चाहिए कि ये मेरे मुझे शुद्ध करने के लिए ये विधि है। और रूप गोस्वामी बताते हैं कि नियम नियमाग्रह के बारे में बताते हैं कि नियमों को पालन ना करना भी ठीक बात नहीं है, और नियमों को उनकी उद्देश्य के बगैर पालन करना भी ठीक नहीं है। नियमों के पीछे एक उद्देश्य है कि कृष्ण भक्ति बढ़ाए, पर वो भूल करके बस नियम पालन करें वो भी ठीक नहीं है।
Okay. Here's an important category of question. There are some issues or problems to which feelings of pain and unhappiness are connected. It's right on the theme of what we were reading. I feel difficulty in dealing with those things, as there is a fear that when I will go deep into my heart to understand that problem or that issue for seeking a solution, again those unpleasant feelings will become alive in my heart. What should I do? Got it? Several to-do things. One, don't feel alone. Or say it positively, go through this exercise with those who are assisting you in going through this exercise, or specifically with your mentor. Because Krishna has given each one of us many resources, and those many resources are to assist us in this process. They will give us strength beyond our own strength. And it's not just a mental adjustment or something. In other words, that we're tricking ourselves. It's actual strength. Krishna is pleased when he sees that we're confidentially disclosing our heart to others, and those in turn, those others are confidentially disclosing their heart to us. Krishna is pleased. And when Krishna is pleased, that gives us strength. It gives us happiness, we become pleased, but it also gives us strength. So don't go it alone is the first. Don't think of oneself, or don't go it alone. Second thing is, illusion assists us in identifying with that which we are not. So these problems or issues that give us pain or unhappiness is in that category. It's what we're not. The problem is not the issue or the thing, you know, the circumstance. It's our identification with it that's the problem. So the second point is, detach yourself from the mistaken identification with the problem and the pain that thinking about the problem brings. So that detachment is made possible by attachment to this spiritual side of life or to the spiritual conception of life. And so once again, reconnecting with those who are guiding us in our spiritual life will help us, and including the scriptures and reading the scriptures in the proper way like we discussed earlier this morning. We'll feel support or transcendental strength from that knowledge that's given to us. Transcendental knowledge will help us detach ourselves from the illusion. And a third thing is that there are some things that appear to be problems that aren't even problems at all. Like mistaking a rope to be a snake and becoming very afraid. Look at that snake! And in fact, it's just a rope. But there are some things that are problematic. Like if you have a stone in your shoe, you can just go along, I don't have a stone in my shoe, and you know, it's bleeding and blistering, and I don't have a stone in my shoe. But if you want to save your foot, you know, take your shoe off and remove the stone and put your shoe back on. It will help the situation if you address, although it looks, oh, look at that, there's blood and, oh, there's a blister and... But then, you know, you can expose it to some antiseptic and put a bandage on so no further infection comes, and it will heal in a natural way. So if it's something that's not just, you know, the rope that looks like a snake, but something that's bothering you that needs some attention, better you follow it. It's one of the rules. Not the rule, but it's one of the rules of something that's causing, especially recurring difficulty. That's very important. Pay attention to those things that are causing recurring difficulty. And just stay with it. And look behind the thing and see where's the root of it. In other words, you're feeling a pain in your foot. I wonder why I'm feeling the pain in my foot. Find out what's causing the pain in your foot. Take the stone out of your shoe or the thorn out of your skin, and the pain will subside. Find the root behind the pain. The pain will go away, as well as the cause of the irritation that brings the pain. And all the while, the fourth point is, all the while, strong sadhana. The foundation of everything that we're doing in our spiritual life is our spiritual practices, and especially the chanting of the holy name. So I would say, there's no signature here, but whoever wrote this, don't go the direction of, oh, it's painful to look at this thing, so I can't look at the thing. Go the other direction. With these points in mind. Okay, there's three questions all related to the same topic coming up, the mentor topic. And I'll read all three of them and then answer all three of them. The first one has to do with identifying or being assigned or selecting a mentor. Person has written, I do not know specifically about my mentor, and I have a good relationship with some senior devotees. One, can I approach them as a mentor? Two, how to approach them. I am not taking proper association of them. I'll come back. So it's selection. Then the next is opening. I'm not feeling connection with my mentor. This thing I discussed with some devotees, but I don't get satisfaction. I don't get satisfactory answer. What to do for proper connection? And then doubt is the third one. As you explained, we should make loving relationships with the persons who are guiding us. Sometimes I feel so many struggles to open my heart. What steps can I take to open my heart? Sometimes my emotions come very strong, doubting. Do they really love me? What is the reason behind what they're doing? Why do they love me? What relationship they are having with me, etc. So, another term would work very nicely with, instead of mentors, other terms can be in Chalpati they have a counselor system. It's very similar, just a different name. Whatever the name, the function is someone that's specifically representing a spiritual master, and they're an agent of, so there's some authority invested in them to perform a particular function. At least that's how I regard the system. And they're persons who, not just as, it's not a random thing. Oh, I like this one, I like that one. But it's in consultation with spiritual master. That's how I take up this system. The informal arrangements that people may have, somebody who they confide in, or a number of somebodies who they confide in, that's very nice. We should have confidential relationships. But a mentor is a very specific relationship or service where, in an authorized way, representing to and reporting to the spiritual master, someone is guiding an individual. And at least with persons who are my disciples, I'd like to be part of that identification of who that mentor is, and then be part of the communication flow with that mentor. So it's not a random thing, it's a formal thing. And so this person that wrote, you know, I don't know who my mentor is, I suggest that you separately, you write a letter to me and we can go through the process of identifying a mentor. For practical purposes, most of you, by my encouragement, have accepted Jagatananda and Ananda Vrindavan as mentors. For consistency purposes is one reason. Also, they have very particular skills that are suitable for the particular situation that you've all just passed through. And so I would prefer, unless there's a particularly strong and, you know, compelling reason, otherwise, that they would, at least initially, work as the mentors for all of you. So there's consistency and uniformity. There's not cross signals and all those other kinds of immature behaviors that take place, comparing and all those other yucky things that happen. And once that personality is identified by that process that I just mentioned, it can lead us into the second, which is feeling connected with that mentor or the mentors, the husband-wife couple. And that takes time, just like any relationship takes some time to form. It takes a number of exchanges with the individual so that you can understand the other individual, they can understand you, they hear from you, you hear from them. So there's a relationship, and that takes some time. And there's this matter of opening the heart. Generally, when we just initially begin a relationship, there's certain things that we'll happily disclose, and there's some other things that we don't so happily disclose. Until we can understand the person is to be trusted, they're trustworthy, they're wise, they're confidential, that is, they're not going to go blah, 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 blah. They're confidential. And they're not interested in managing my life. They're interested in helping and caring and showing support and wisdom. This isn't a management relationship. It's like an elder brother relationship. A caring, wise person who I can look up to and share anything and everything and feel completely safe. I'm not being judged. I'm not being manipulated. I'm being shown understanding and care. Wow. Somebody actually understands, and somebody actually cares, and somebody actually isn't judging. I can show all my dirt. And even, you know, the accomplishments, the pride I have in my accomplishments, and that's also, it's just anything. The good and the bad and the ugly. And it's okay. And they can help guide me to take the next step. So that takes time. And it takes, you know, acting in a confidential way. And gradually, assuming both parties are being honest with each other, the relationship grows. So it's step by step by step. And some persons can more easily open. Some persons is far more difficult to open. But that's what it is required. Gradually open. In a trusting the other party kind of a manner. Now, here's the doubt. This has to do with bad experiences that says, what do they want from me? Why are they doing this? They're spending so much time and energy and attention. What do they want from me? Like, you know, because we're so used to material relationships. What's a spiritual relationship? I've said this maybe 100 times, so here's 101. In this world, my experience is most people have not had a loving relationship. They've not experienced what that is. And so they don't know how to act in a loving relationship. And the second thing is, when there is such a relationship that's extended to them, they can't process it. They don't know what to do. They either run away or just like laugh or freeze. They don't know what to do. They don't know how to reciprocate with something that's an actual loving relationship. So in response to this third question, I'm recommending that you extend a little trust to Jagatananda and Ananda Vrindavan, those of you that have them as your mentors. Not jump in the pool with both feet, but, you know, swish your foot around a little bit. Test the water. Trust them a little bit and see how they act with you. And you'll be very pleased because they're very caring individuals. They're very accomplished individuals. They're very sensitive individuals. And I trust them implicitly. I trust them implicitly. So I'm encouraging you to trust them a little bit and see how that, and where are they coming from? I shared this with some others. They're doing this for two reasons. They're doing the service of extending themselves to all of you for reasons. One is they care, and the other is I ask them to. Because they were doing something else. Going back about 3 years, 2 to 3 years, Jagatananda had, he was a, like a cornucopia of services. He had so many services, too many services. He wasn't doing any of them to his satisfaction. Because he liked service. So he decided, we had the long discussion, like a long discussion. And he decided, he was asking, and it was his decision, but he decided he was going to eliminate some things. And get it down to what he really wanted to do. And it turned out that what he really wanted to do and what his wife really wanted to do was the same thing. And that was they wanted to work with children. So they got really involved in Sunday school and children's camps. Whenever we have yatras, they're working with the children. It's, you know, it's that was their dedication. Because it just really resonated with what they wanted to do. And they just, you know, one by one took their other services, gave them to other people, and were happy. And then I contacted Jagatananda and said, I need your help. Please consider. There's a situation with a group of devotees, and I feel that your skills and your wife's skills would be very, very suited for this situation. Please talk about it with one another and let me know. So they did a U-turn. I mean, it didn't happen like that, but in course of time, they've let go of many of their working with children services to work with you. Because they're sacrificing individuals and they care. They care about others. And I don't go around asking people to do a lot of things, but this one I asked them and they did. So those are two reasons. So if, what's their reasons? Those are the two reasons. They're caring people. And they're making a sacrifice of what they want for what I request. And it suits their nature. It's not like it's, you know, completely against their nature. It's very much their nature. So that's why. Do they really care? Yes, they really care. And stay with that experience and examine yourself. But I know that they care. I probably get 5 or 6 communications every day from Jagatananda and 2 or 3 from his wife every 2 or 3 days about y'all here in the room and their exchanges with you all. And it's not a burden. They're happy. That's my response to that third question. During this past Vyasa Puja in New York in January, there was a lot of discussion about mentorship, including mentors bringing up topics about mentorship with the assembly. So I'm not going to take any questions. Nice, but sorry. So I recommend, Jayant, why don't you get in touch with Jagatananda to find out which are those lectures that are specifically about mentorship. There's some other ones, and then... Oh, okay. There's some other ones. Ask him to get the other ones and pass it on to the devotees to listen to. Okay. Here's... two questions that relate. It's that the topic is, if we're going to say yes to Krishna, what part do we have to play? That's not what the language is, but that's the question. How can we understand, there's two. How can we understand that the outcome of our endeavor is Krishna's plan, or our failure to do, our failure due to lethargy? And the other is, someone missed the yatra in 2008 and they felt very badly about it. Is this, Krishna didn't want me to go, or I did something wrong, or how do I understand the situation? So, the response to this is, in all activities, there's five factors mentioned in 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, and one of them is endeavor. So that's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to endeavor. Abhyasa, or prayasa. We make some effort, or we practice at something. Something comes from us, but then something has to come from Krishna also. So, from our side, we receive an instruction, we make a plan to fulfill the instruction, we make sure that our plan is a reasonable plan by consulting with others, and then we strive to act according to that plan, to fulfill an instruction. And we leave the results up to Krishna. Because controlling is Krishna's department, and service is our department. Controlling is not our department, and service is not Krishna's department. So we strive. We make effort. Then it's up to Krishna what the outcome is. Now we may anticipate a certain outcome, but it may not be like we anticipate because we're not the controllers. So it's quite simple. If we're happy being servants, just be servant. And we're happy that Krishna is controller. He's much better at it than we are. Let Krishna be the controller. And that's our relationship. We serve, and Krishna controls. So if you're not sure, then you can look at, was I inattentive? Was I not making effort? Was I lazy? So don't be lazy, don't be inattentive, and continue to improve in that effort. And the devotee that was unable to attend the Mayapur Yatra 2008, despite they prepared themselves fully, similar, you make all efforts, and then Krishna decides. And if it's a sincere desire, and Krishna is happy to see that it happens, then it'll happen. It may be, in some cases, I've seen and experienced, that Krishna doesn't like this other discussion the other day. Krishna doesn't like it when we have a fruitive mentality. We get attached, or we get proud, or we're fruitive. So Krishna helps us become free from those things by some effort we make. Doesn't happen. And then we realize, hey, I'm not the controller. Even the thing that we wanted to do might have been a good thing. Going to the Mayapur Yatra might have been a good thing. But maybe our consciousness wasn't right. And Krishna was giving us some extra mercy and helping us become relieved of some. Not necessarily that was the circumstance, but sometimes things happen that way. And whoever missed the Mayapur Yatra can listen to the recordings of the Mayapur Yatra. And ask Krishna, I hope you'll let me go to the next one. And if there's something that was wrong in my consciousness, please give that indication. And I'll try to be more pure in my purpose. Not just have the right thing, want to do the right things, but want to do the right things in the right way for the right reasons. Because I just want to be your instrument, your servant. Then you can be happy.